Chapter 6, text number 14. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya nu bhamso yashavadatam preyavrato yatra humam puranaha kritavataraha purushaha sa adyash chachara dharmam yad akarma hetum hansa paribrajaka chaja ashtotara satashishimanesi bhakti vedanta swami shri prabhupada. We'll do word for word. Ahotep descended as an incarnation and executed religious principles that could free one from the results of fruitive activity. Please repeat. Oh, what shall I say of the dynasty of Priyavrata, which is pure and very much celebrated? In that dynasty, the Supreme Person, the original personality of Godhead, descended as an incarnation and executed religious principles that could free one from the results of fruitive activity. Purport. There are many dynasties in human society wherein the Supreme Lord descends as an incarnation. Lord Krishna appeared in the Jadu dynasty, and Lord Ramachandra appeared in the Ishvaku or Raghu dynasty. Similarly, Lord Rishabhadeva appeared in the dynasty of King Priyavrata. All these dynasties are very famous, and of all of them, the dynasty of Priyavrata is most famous. So here is describing how when the Lord appears, he has to appear somewhere in some dynasty or another. So he appears in these dynasties and he glorifies that dynasty in the prayers of Queen Kunti. This is just as the Himalayas, the sandalwood trees appear in Himalayas and they become famous because of that. So similarly, Krishna, your appearing in the Jadu dynasty has made the dynasty famous. So Krishna has to appear, so he selects his mother and father who is going to appear through. So they have to be the great devotees or Nitya Siddhas. But anyway, he chooses his parents and he descends here into this world, and we see that whenever the Lord descends, it's always in India, Bharat Vasha, yesterday's verse, Bharata Bhumi Hoilashe. The people of Bharat Vasha, especially Indian, you should understand the science of Krishna consciousness. And when you're convinced, you should take it and give it to the whole world, because you have this message of Bhagavad and the whole world does not have this. This is the significance of Bharat Bhasha. Prabhupada said, India is especially meant for self-realization. And because they have this knowledge of Vedic culture, and the further away you get from Bharat Bhasha, the further away you get from Vedic culture. And you see that practically. The further away you get, the less culture is exhibited. So, Krishna's appearing here. Of course, it doesn't mean out. Often it says we speak of Malecha Desh. You know, outside of India, we say Malecha Desh. Further away, but Prabhupada said Malecha actually doesn't mean outside of India. It says anyone who is not following Vedic principles. You should be considered Malecha. So Krishna appears in always he always in India, at least what we get to know about from Krishna. It says he always appears in India for two reasons. And one is that this planet, this material world, is a middle planetary system, and it's called the Karmasthan, or the place of work. So here you come and perform your work to get your next body, the next result. So you come here, you can do pious works, you can be elevated to a higher situation, or you can do impious works and be elevated to degraded to a lower position in the material universe. So this is the place where you work to get your next result, but in the higher planets you don't get that situation. You're just paying off your good karma, and in the lower planets you're just paying off the bad karma. But it's not a place of determining your next body. But in this material world, then you can actually choose this middle planetary system. So therefore Krishna comes and he speaks Bhagavad Gita and gives you the message, because now you can make a choice. This is the place for making the choice of what your next destination will be. So then you can act according to Krishna's instructions, and you can go to the higher planetary systems, or you can even, if you really follow the essence of Krishna's instructions, then you'll go back to Godhead like Lord Rishabhadev. He's giving principles, religious principles, but those principles which free one from fruitive activities or entanglement in this material world. He's giving information to go back to Godhead. So another reason Krishna always appears here is that Vedic culture is followed. And outside of India, it's not followed. So therefore, it can be... the Vedic culture is set up so much because it's what goes on in the spiritual world. And what we get here, the culture of the spiritual world is reflected here as Vedic culture of Varnashram Dharma. So in culture of Vedic Dharma, then you get, when someone comes to your house, what do you call it? Atithi Shaiva, no, Narayan. It's like Narayan is coming into your house. What's the word they use? Huh? Okay, Atithi. Devabrata. That the guest is coming, but you treat him just like Narayan has come. For 3 days, you can treat him like that. After that, you don't have to treat. He may be taking advantage. He may like the situation being treated like God, so he may just stay and take advantage. At least for 3 days, you should treat the guest like God. So, although when Krishna was present here, not many people knew he was a Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only a few of his devotees knew that. Yet, he could move freely. He could go around to the different relatives' house, because when he came, they would treat him like God, because he was God. So it's okay for him when he comes here, because he's treated like God. He's not disrespected. In the West, generally the culture is that you go to your friend's house, even you knock on the door and you say, you know, your friend then says, "Well, he's just taking his lunch. Can he come back later?" Okay, in India, you come in, "Oh, please come in, sit down, take prasad." You know. So everyone is welcome in Vedic. You're made to welcome and make them feel like God. So Krishna is quite at home because he is God. So he wanders, he goes to someone's house, a relative, and they treat him just like God. So they're not offensive. So Krishna can kind of move freely in this Vedic society. But outside of that, he can't move freely because everyone will just be offensive all the time. So he says of all the dynasties, these dynasties are very great because the Lord has taken his birth in there to purify the dynasties, actually. And they become great because of the appearance of Krishna, whenever the Lord appears. That makes them famous. Just like our dynasty, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness dynasty, we're famous. I don't know about in Bombay. You get much publicity in a newspaper when you do something in Bombay. In Calcutta also. It's, you know, it's a huge city. There's thousands of buildings, you know, gorgeous buildings as well. And you get a little tiny building in Chowpatty. And somehow or another, you always get in the newspaper and often in the front page. And in Calcutta, you know, it's kind of something insignificant. Oh, they always get the pictures of devotees. You know, they're doing this, they're doing this. And it's only a little tiny building. And there's only a few devotees. And there's big families, joint families in India. They've got luxurious houses. And they never get in the newspapers. But somehow or another, we always get it in the newspapers. Because we're famous. Why? Because Krishna's taken birth in ISKCON. Prabhupada said Krishna's, in the form of the holy name, he's actually taken birth in ISKCON. He's taken shelter in ISKCON. So therefore, ISKCON becomes famous because of Krishna's presence. As long as we're always chanting the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare. Hare Ram, 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 Hare. So Krishna is present, and we always want to keep him present. So we're always chanting Hare Krishna wherever we go. Then the dynasty become famous. But without Krishna consciousness, you can get great dynasty, but without Krishna appearing there, what is the use of it? You can be very nicely situated, you know, even to the standard of mode of goodness, nice dynasty. But what is the use of it? Because, again, you have to come back again. Generally, you go to Pitraloka. Those who are interested in maintaining dynasties, they go to Pitraloka. So you worship the forefathers. Of course, you're obliged to do that. Because when you are born a debtor. You have 6 debts to pay to your parents, to the rishis who give you knowledge, to the people who maintain you, like the government who look after and protect you, to the devatas who give heat, light, everything like that. And to your forefathers, because you're a product of your forefathers, therefore you're indebted to them. You're a result of your mother and father, this body. So you have a debt to pay. It's called a rini. So if you pay this debt, that's very nice, because that is the way the system is set up. And so they worship the forefathers, and they go to Pitraloka. As long as they worship their forefathers, they can stay up in Pitraloka. The moment they stop offering their pindas and everything, immediately they fall down from that place. So as long as you propitiate the forefathers, your ancestors, they will stay up there. So that's why the system is nice, because in culture they say, no, you have to worship your forefathers. They encourage you to do it because your grandfathers and great-grandfathers, they're up there. It's a nice place, Pitraloka. And the thing is, you're with your old relatives again, everyone you know. But when you stop that worshipping them, after a few generations, generally they stop worshipping. And again, they have to come back into this situation again, but they're born exactly in the same families. So these tight-knit families who do the Pinda Puja, actually they're together. They go up to Pitraloka and they all join again, and they come down again. It's so tightly fixed. But what is the actual use of it? The result is just simply taking birth and death again and again and again. There's not much to be gained by it. Gopal Bhatta Goswami points out in his Sakriya Dipika that it's good that you're paying off this debt, because if you don't pay it off and you're a debtor, then you're obligated. You've got to come back and make up for what you didn't do. You're, you know, like a criminal. You get a lower position, but you got to pay for that. So therefore, you have to pay your debts. Otherwise, it's not the proper culture, and you'll get a bad situation in your next birth. And if you do pay off your debts, then the forefathers become obliged to you. You become a servant of the forefathers. And because you're a servant of the forefathers, therefore you go to Pitraloka, or the demigods. You're worshipping the demigods very diligently, because you're a debtor to the demigods. And because you worship them so diligently, they're very attracted to you, so that you can go to their planet also. Because you become a nice servant. So the thing is that If you don't pay off your debts, you're in a bad situation, you've got to come and take another. If you pay off your debts, you become a servant of those people you're worshipping, and you have to go to their planet. And again, come back. So the whole thing is that there's no freedom from it. You're obligated to pay off your debts, but by doing that, it keeps you entangled. And if you don't pay off your debts, also you're entangled. You've got to come back and take a look. So both ways, they're just like the same opposite sides of the same coin. They're just keeping you bound up in the material world, but one is very nicely decorated in the name of dharma and culture and dynasty and things like that. But it's exactly the same thing. It's nothing but birth after birth after birth in the material world. So he is saying that, therefore, he points out in many places in Hari Bhakti Vilas that, you know, if you worship the demigods or if you worship the forefathers, after being initiated by Vaishnava, bona fide Vaishnava into Krishna mantra, then you commit nama aparad and Vaishnava aparad. You're doing your culture nicely, but if you've been initiated by, you make nama aparad. So therefore, the one who is initiated, then he doesn't have those responsibilities anymore. To worship the forefathers, to worship the demigods, he completely depends on Krishna. But it's not, although he's callous, Gopal Bhatta Goswami says, no, you worship. He said the devotees, they worship their family with devotion while they're alive. And after they leave, they offer Mahaprasad Pinda. It's a different thing. They offer Vishnu Prasad to propagate them. but the idea is that they're not so foolish to identify with that particular family. They're living in the family. They're relating to the dynasty. As devotees, even here we have our congregation. We have family members. We're reciprocating. There's love and affection between family members and things like that. Sons, daughters, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters. All these different relationships are going on. And we're relating, you know, with affection to all these. But the time of leaving the body, the devotees are not foolish enough to maintain their identity. As long as we're living, then we relate. We can relate in society like that. As devotees of Krishna, but we relate, you know, in relationship with mother, father. But at the time of leaving your body, this has no meaning anymore. My mother, my father, my daughters, my sons, my husband, my wife. So a devotee, then at that time he can completely concentrate his attention on his eternal relationship with Krishna. But socially he can act while he's living, but at the time of leaving his body he's not going to be so foolish. Because then he'll come back again if he's attached to his family members. So that's the advantage of being devotees. When the devotees leave their body, you see all the devotees around, they're chanting Hare Krishna. And you go to a Kami's house and they're all crying and our relative is, you know, and the whole bondage of affection is there. So it just keeps them bound up. I have a friend named Mishrara Prabhu. His wife just left her body. Her name was Hari Priya. She had cancer. And in Australia, and she had a nurse was coming in to look after and everything like that and checking up and everything. And Ishwara Prabhu just opened up his house and he said to his wife, you've just got to give yourself to everyone. He says, you've got to follow Prabhupada's example. He was just there and anybody could come and see him. He said. And he opened up his house and just all the devotees were coming in and out 24 hours and there was a kirtan going on and he was just cooking prasad for everybody. And he called me on the telephone just a few days before she was leaving and he said, it's such a beautiful atmosphere here, he said. The devotees are coming in. It's just so nice. It's just such a loving atmosphere. And we know she's going to leave her body. The cancer is obvious. And she's there and she's just looking at the devotees as much as she can do. She was getting pretty weak. But he said, it's such a nice atmosphere. And the nurse, who was like a kami, who was coming to look after her, she said she was completely amazed. She said, I've never ever seen anything like that before. She said, usually you go to the house and everyone's crying and lamenting and they're pacing up and down and they're chain-smoking cigarettes and taking whiskey or whatever it is to calm their nerves. And the whole tense atmosphere, she said, here is something completely different. Everyone, it's a joyful atmosphere. It was joyful because she was perfecting her life. She was going back to Godhead. And all the demigods and everything like that, they come to assist. Instead of being a cause of bondage by, you know, devoting your life to demigods and other living, but they actually come to assist a devotee going back to Godhead. In that verse in Brahma Samhita, talking about Durga being the shadow energy of the... being the shadow energy of the original Durga, which is Mahamaya. And in the purport there, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that they are worshipping Devi, Durga Devi, for their material benefits. And Prabhupada said, actually they're fools because she is the material energy. She comprises the whole of material. So, and it's all her energy. So at the time of death, it's her property, it's her body. So she has her tree soul, you know, that's giving the Adi Baltic, Adi Devic, Adi Apic miseries. She's always at every time she's jabbing. It's one of these points is going in your body, or two or three. But at any time that you're suffering from Adi Baltic, Adi Devic. So she's doing all that. And finally she says, okay, now I want I'll take the whole body back. And she takes the whole body back. So Prabhupada said they're fools. They're doing big, especially in Bengal, they're doing big, big Durga puja, things like that. He said they're worshipping their dead. Because ultimately she's going to come and take back her. It's her body. It's her energy. So she's going to... He said they're fools. They're worshipping their dead. But Bhaktisiddhanta said, Saraswati Thakur says, but one who becomes a devotee, he said he actually worships Durga Devi. This is the way to propitate Durga Devi. Because actually she's a great devotee of Krishna, but she has that, what task? Prabhupada says, she has a thankless task, yes, thank you. She has a thankless task of keeping all the living end, but she's a pure devotee, she doesn't want to do it, but as a service to Krishna she has to do it. So when a person becomes a devotee and gets out of her clutches, or she releases him from her clutches, she's so happy. And she actually helps that living entity go back to Godhead. The same personality who keeps you bound up in this material world, when a person becomes a devotee, she's so happy, she gives him assistance. Because it's her whole universe, hers. She's the mother. She gives assistance to let the devotee out easy. So he said, this is the way to actually propitate the demigods and Durga Devi, is by worshipping Krishna, becoming a devotee of Krishna, and then they'll all be pleased with you. And they propitate your going back to Godhead. They give you all assistance. So, talking of time, I didn't know, but this just happens to coincide with the verse. But today is the disappearance of Govinda Ghosh. This is the Pindadan Leela, Govinda Ghosh, yeah? So this is all about, he has a nice Leela, offering Pinda, the Shraddha to the forefathers, etc. So Govinda Ghosh, he was, there's three brothers, Madhava Ghosh and Vasudev Ghosh and Govinda Ghosh. And he was living in Agradeep. And today there's a big, big festival in Agradeep. The huge mela there. It's not far from Katwa. And he was living there. There's a huge mela. It spreads all over. A big fair comes. Everyone goes there. All the owls and the bows and there's kirtan. Everyone's having their little kirtan group. And especially all the Ghoshes. Ghosh is the title of the cowherd men. Even Krishna is a Ghosh. He's considered a Ghosh. And especially in Bengal, I don't know about here so much, but there's hundreds of villages, Ghosh villages. Generally, they look after the cows and buffaloes, like Krishna did. Yeah, they're all good. And there's hundreds and hundreds of villages there And they're all devotees. They all have kirtan parties in the villages. So it's their ancestor, Govinda Ghosh. So they all go there, and there's trucks of people and hanging out the end, and everyone's going huge because they consider it's one of their forefathers because he's a Ghosh. So all the Ghoshes have to come. Huge festival. And the festival is at... is it Gopinath? Gopinath, did he say? I think it's Gopinathji. He actually offers pinda. He actually offers the foodstuffs to his father, Govinda Ghosh, on his disappearance day. So the story was that Govinda Ghosh, he was living there serving Gopinath with his family. And suddenly his wife died. So he was upset that she had died quite prematurely, and she was, you know, doing all the housework and everything. And he had a young son. So anyway, he was still looking after his son, serving Gopinathji very faithfully. And shortly after that, his son died. And he was very angry. He became very angry. Now my son has died. He was very young. He was really angry. And so the next day, after performing the rituals for his son, he didn't get out of bed. He was just laying there in a mood of anger. Why, you know, son has to die. So he didn't bother to get up. And then Gopinathji was wondering what's happening, you know, why no one has come to serve me or anything like that. So he understood that Govinda Ghosh is in an angry mood about what's happening. So he's not going to come, he's not waking me up. So Gopinath, he came to the room and he came in very stealthily. And he went to the bedside and he very cautiously approached Govinda Ghosh's feet and he started massaging his legs very gently. And then he saw Gopinath there was massaging his legs, and Gopinath he had to approach him very carefully. He didn't want to, because he was in it like his angry mood. Then after he massaged his legs for a little while, then Gopinath said, "I can't understand your intelligence, this logic you have." He said, "First one son dies, then you try to kill the other one. I can't understand your logic and your intelligence." Govinda Ghosh said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I've only got one son. Why are you saying I'm trying to kill the other son?" He said, "Well, am I not your son? I mean, every day you're coming to wake me up in the morning. Every day you give me a bath. Every day you give me food. I'm completely dependent on you now. I'm like your son also. And now you're not looking after me. It means I'm going to die because I'm getting hungry. And if you don't feed me, then you're going to lose your other son." And Govinda Ghosh said, "Oh, really?" He said, "But anyway, you see, the purpose of having children and a son is so that they can do the pinda, so they can propitate the family. What's going to happen to me now? I've got no one to do pinda. When I leave my body, what's going to be my destination? I've got no one to propitate me and to do pinda." And Gopinath said, "I can do it for you if you like." He said, "You can?" He said, "Yeah, okay." He said, "You're happy now?" He said, "Yeah, I'm happy." He said, "Please cook something for me. I'm very hungry." So then Govinda Ghosh got up and did his cooking and he was serving Gopinathji. And then actually on the disappearance day, Gopinath actually performed the leela. And at that time, the people could see, and quite for some years after that, many people could see that. Now, everybody could see that time, especially the first time he did it. Everybody could see. And after that, those who had the vision could see. Now nobody can see. Unless you've got the vision, you can, because it's a Nitya Leela. But anyway, he actually does the pindadan, and he puts a kusha grass ring on his finger to offer the foodstuffs to the forefathers the traditional way. And he actually offered pinda to Govinda Ghosh. And so it's famous. Today is that Leela will be going on Thousands of people will be going. They're all offering bhog and everything to do. To Gopinathji, who does the pindala. They take Gopinathji out of the altar, and the samadhi of Govinda Ghosh is quite near. So they actually take the deity out now, and they still put the kushagrass ring, they dress him in white cloth, and they give him, and he offers some grains to Govinda Ghosh. But they say the first year he personally was doing it, he went out there and he personally did the whole thing. Shri Govinda Ghosh ki jai, Pindadan Leela ki, Shri Gopinathji ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Nitai Go Premanandi. Thank you very much. Any comments or questions? Okay. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.